You're tuned to listener-supported AD70.net.
Well, I want to welcome you back to another edition of The Journey here on AD70.net. Today, a special edition of The Journey, Dave Curtis from Berean Bible Church joining me here in the studio. Stay with us. David Curtis joining me here in the studio for another edition of The Journey on AD70.net. David, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great, Michael. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Virginia.
Now, remind me, you're in Chesapeake, Virginia, is it?
I live in Chesapeake. The church is in Virginia Beach, Virginia now.
Okay, now, where exactly was the church before? Was it in Virginia Beach or was it in...
The church was in Chesapeake. We were meeting at a YMCA in Chesapeake up until, I guess, middle of September last year. And we found and rented a building and kind of renovated it, and that's where we're at right now.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, the one thing that I know you had shared with me this last year was just the frustration that you weren't able to use the internet there at the Y when nobody else was around anyways. And to some extent, I understand why they would do that. But on the other hand, it's like, come on, Young Men's Christian Association. You should be willing to help us promote this view of the gospel. But let me just say, we are all very glad that you were able to make that move and get connected to the internet. And you have been broadcasting now your services, the live video feed, for probably about 6 weeks now. And it has been fun to watch the progression of that from the very beginning, and learning all the new little tips and tricks and things like that that can be done with the video. And I just got to say, I really appreciate you allowing me to work together with you to bring this to all of the AD70.net audience, and allowing us this last week, we started using the AD70.net chat room as the main way that all the different people can come together and communicate during the service. And we had a significant amount of people there in the chat room on Sunday, and I'm looking forward to it getting filled up each and every week.
Yeah, it's the frustrating part to me, Mike, is I can't partake in the chat room.
Well,
I'm not talented enough to try to watch, although I have tried in the beginning things. I had my phone up there with me. But when we first started out, we were using, I can't remember the name of the service now.
Stickam.
Yeah, Stickam. And I had, there was an app for that for the Android phone, so I could go on the app and set my phone down there and kind of, you know, watch what was going on. But I think we've improved greatly the video quality by going to, you know, the watershed that we're using right now. And right. But it doesn't, you know, I can't even get in the chat room now. But I guess you guys are, Garrett says you guys are going to try to work on that, because on my phone, when I open up the window for the video, if I try to open up the chat room, won't let me because it won't let me do two pop-up windows.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing when you're dealing with all these newer technologies. And realistically, these the broadcasting technology and the chat and all that stuff, they're really doing their best to catch up to the latest technology. The chat room that I'm using here on AD70.net, it has the ability to be used on an iPhone, but we all know that Dave Curtis doesn't like iPhones. And
no, I'm an Android man.
You're an Android man. And so my hope is that one of these days, real soon here, the company that I'm using for that chat service will also then be able to broadcast the chat onto the Android phones as well. And, you know, I really enjoy this, the chat room function that we are using, because it's so nice. It's fully moderated. You know, you don't have to worry about somebody coming in there and using a false name or whatever like that. It's just nice. And enough about the chat. So what's going on in your world? You just moved to a new location there in Virginia, and You know, we started the video broadcasting of the service, and one of the things you were just telling me off the air here is that there's a larger audience almost that is watching the services than actually attend the church on Sundays. And your ministry in and of itself has been, you know, reached a worldwide audience that I'm sure 13 years ago when you came to this understanding of fulfillment, you could have never imagined. What's it like?
13 years ago, I couldn't imagine anything. You know, when I came to this view, I remember it so well. You know, I mean, I was pastoring a Baptist church. Well, actually, we had changed the name. It was a Bible church at the time. And we were probably running about 250 people, and things were going well. Finances were good. Everything was wonderful. And it took us a while to get to that place, but we were good. And then all of a sudden, I had a paradigm shift, and I just knew it was going to mess things up. And sure enough, it did. You know, the elders, one of them was interested in what I had to say. The other two didn't even want to talk about it and would not discuss it, which was rare. That's the only time it ever happened in our group. I mean, they were just so afraid of it. I said, look, I just want to take the Bible. I just want to use the Bible and discuss this with the Bible. And they were like, no, no, we're not talking about it with you. And it was a stalemate. I mean, so the two of us got together and decided that the best thing for the church would be if we just resigned. You know, because it would, you know, we didn't want to hurt a lot of people. So that's what we did. And, you know, I just, you know, my wife was scared to death. And, you know, I said, look, I trust these guys. It'll be all right. And the second we resigned, boy, they just mounted a fear campaign and we were heretics and it just went crazy. And so, no, I didn't. I mean, that week was I remember that week well. It was a horrible week. I just, you know, I was 43 years old. I felt that was kind of the end of it for me as far as ministry. I felt I put myself in a position now that, you know, I've kind of taught myself, studied myself out of ministry. Right. And that next week we started a church. And a lot of people were there just out of curiosity, you know, from the former church, wondering, you know, what's this guy gone off onto? Because they wouldn't even let me discuss while I was why I was resigning. I just had to say it was, you know, theological issues. So it was interesting. I mean, we began to teach it, and you know, we got a place to meet, and you know, it was very difficult. It was very difficult in the beginning, but. You know, eventually we kind of got settled in our niche and moved on. And, you know, we ended up being, we were actually stayed supported by the church. There was always enough there, which is just absolutely amazing, you know, I mean, because of what we went through. But there was always finances there that I was always full time. But as time has gone on, as I was sharing with you earlier, the whole thing has changed to the point where every year we see more of an increase in finances from outside the church. Hmm. And last year, our a situation was that 71% of our budget came in from outside.
And that's amazing.
So, it's absolutely amazing.
You know, because you are, yes, you have had a website that's been on the internet at least for 6 years, because that's how long I've known about it. And, you know, you've been able to reach out to a worldwide audience, and that should tell you something. 71% of your support comes in from outside the church, which to me is mind-boggling. And
it is to me also.
Because it was never your intent to be an internet-based ministry. Now, you know, on the other hand, you have somebody like me that everything that I am doing is virtual. Everything is online. It is internet-based, and it is receiving support from around the world. So it's kind of weird to see those things because, you know, the only local support I get, I guess you could say, is, you know, what I've been able to put into this. And, you know, my parents, they do help out a little bit. And it's really neat to see how the world is changing because of the internet. And you have firsthand watched that all happen.
I could have never dreamed, you know, the position that we're in now and what's going on. I just and our website started the day we started the church 13 years ago. We put the website up and boom, started, you know, putting the messages on as they came, you know, as they came about. And so it's been interesting. And we, you know, I had the opportunity to speak at a conference down in Florida. Right after I became a full preterist, not long after there, R.C. Sproul had his eschatology conference there in Orlando, and we did a Ed Stevens, I think it was, put it on right afterwards, a preterist, full preterist conference. And I spoke at that and met some people there. And, you know, just it started from there, you know, outside. And, you know, got to speak at a lot of different conferences, met a lot of people outside, plus the website. And, yeah, it's just taken off. We've been sending out. We had a pretty extensive CD tape. Actually, it was a tape ministry back then. We sent out a lot of tapes every week. And so when the shift occurred, we continued to send the same people tapes, you know, and many of them stuck with it, you know, many of them, you know. So we still send out, now it's CDs, of course. But with the podcast, you know, I imagine someday that won't even, you know, be necessary to send out CDs. But we still send out, you know, CDs every week of the messages. And plus with the podcast and just everything that's happened, it's, you know, it's gone into an area that, like I said, I never would have dreamed. And I also could say it's an area that never would have happened apart from outside people.
Right.
You know, I mean, my whole thing is I love to study. I love to teach. I like to deal with people, you know, in a theological sense like that. It's, to me, it's a lot of fun. But this other stuff, a friend of mine who lived in Harrisonburg, Virginia, I called him and he said, yeah, I'll do a website for you. And he did that website up until, I don't know, 3-4 years ago when Brian took it over. Mm-hmm. So he maintained it for us. I didn't know anything about it. Still don't know anything about it, you know. Right. Now Brian Gann, who lives in Las Vegas now, he maintains the site for us. And his dad, Bill Gann, does the podcast for us.
Right.
And the PDF files that are on the site, Chuck Cody from Florida does those. Right. So it's just a bunch, and you know, it's just these people saw our ministry. You know, Bill somehow got connected with us on the internet, you know, saw our stuff and contacted me and started, you know, we became friends and he just started doing stuff, you know. So it's just, it's amazing how, and the same thing with being online now, I mean, being, you know, live now on Sunday mornings. That kind of was Garrett's, you know, thing. Garrett does the videos and stuff, and we tried to do it at the Y, but like you said, they wouldn't allow us to use their internet. So we said, I guess that, you know, puts that on a hold. But once we got in the building, that was the first thing that came up. Hey, we need to get internet. And so we did. And, you know, I think the first Sunday after we got internet, they broadcast. They broadcast from a computer. You know, they took the computer and set it facing me, you know, and, right. and broadcast over stick cam. No one knew about it. You know, they did it. They let Bill Gann know in Las Vegas. And so, you know, the first 2 weeks they did that. And then next thing, you know, we got it hooked up and running. And every week it's been changing ever since, trying to, you know, get it better and better. But the feedback has been nothing but positive.
Right.
You know?
Well, let me tell you something. When you're dealing with these internet technologies, unfortunately, sometimes what you think is a good idea, you find out next week wasn't. And so you have to make, well, yeah. Seriously, you have to make a lot of changes and you have to be willing to. And that's got to be one of the hardest things for me because as we've been growing, I've been finding out that there are better ways of doing what I started a year ago. And so when you make those changes to your website, you know, then all of a sudden you start getting these emails from people, hey, this link's not working, this isn't working. And it's like, I know. And so, you know, I think, you know, in the middle of the night, I'll be having a dream and all of a sudden my wife will hear me saying, clear cache cookies in history, clear cache cookies in history. And what are you talking about? Oh, never mind. I'm just so used to saying it all day long that. But you know what? That's just one of those things that you have to be willing to be flexible, especially when it does come to the internet, because the internet is still so new. It's like America when it first became a nation. It was something that was so spread out and there were so many different rules where you went. There were different societies and different cultures. And, you know, this internet thing that we're a part of, you know, it started going back as early as the 1960s, but we are still in the infant stages of it. And it's going to be interesting to see what does happen on the internet over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And it's kind of exciting to be a part of it and learning.
Absolutely is. It's an amazing, amazing resource. You know, it just, like I said, I never dreamed we'd be where we're at now. And you know, the pain of that first week, although it's still very much real to me and I can still remember it. I got to say that since becoming a preterist, the fellowship has been, you know, something that I've never experienced. You know, I just have so many good close friends, literally, you know, around the country and around the world now, you know, that I have fellowship with, that is just, you know, it's amazing. It really is.
Well, let me just say, I could have never imagined 6 years ago when I came to this understanding of fulfillment that, you know, when I found your website and was constantly looking for more and more content, you know, I'm an audio guy. I can read so much, but I'm the kind of guy that likes to sit with my iPod, go to the gym, go on my bike or whatever, and get out and just listen. I'm an audio learner. And, you know, I could have never imagined 6 years later, I'd be sitting here having a conversation on the radio with Dave Curtis. And here we are nonetheless, you know. And I think you brought up a good point. The fellowship that we have as preterists is something that is so much richer and so much deeper in that, you know, these people that you are fellowshipping with have a strong understanding of the Bible. And I remember when I first became a preterist and I was looking for more content, I think I may have came across a lecture by one of these partial preterist guys that was just really giving a hard time to the full preterists. And one of the things he said, he goes, "Oh, these people, they're always online on the internet. Most of them are on disability or they're unemployed." And they and he goes, "And they know their Bibles really well," as if that's a bad thing.
Yeah,
they know their Bibles really well. I'm thinking, did you just say that? Really? I wish I would have kept a copy of it. But nonetheless, like you said, the fellowship is just unbelievable. And that's, again, part of what I wanted to do with AD70.net was to bring the community together kind of as a point we can all agree on, whether we're Reformed, whether we're Arminian, you know, just whatever, you know, covenant creation, six literal day, young earth. These kind of things are not something that I consider to be a sticking point relationally. And I think we need to be willing to accept that we're going to have these differences. I mean, they had differences in the early church. Jesus even said, look, there's going to be, and I think the unfortunate choice of words, heresies, which means differences. You know, there are going to be divisions within the body, but nonetheless, we're all a part of the same body. And so it is kind of cool to see how we're all kind of coming together.
It really is. And, you know, I think, you know, the internet has done so much to spread this, like you said. It's just, you know, there's people go on there and they look for something. And, you know, it's, I had a lady call me from San Francisco Monday and said that, you know, she was just found the website. And, you know, she said, since then, I've been up all night reading so much, you know, and she goes, I just cannot believe this. And she was just so excited. I mean, she was almost giddy. She was so excited, you know, about what she had discovered. And she had tried to share it with a pastor at her church the day previously. And she said that didn't go too well. And I said, no, I said, you need to kind of keep this to yourself for a while. Just try to learn, you know, try to figure out what you believe before you go talking to others. I said, you're going to find out the reception is not always that good from other people.
Right. Well, you know what is an interesting thing? And I think that there have been a lot of people trying to do this. And that is, how do you breach or broach the topic of fulfillment? And it's been my discovery that a lot of times when it comes out, oh, wait, you believe the second coming was in 70 AD? It puts up a wall. And or what it does is it causes like these 20 questions to fire off inside that person's head when you're talking to them. It's like when they realize what you're saying, all of a sudden they can still see your mouth moving, but they're not hearing what you're saying.
Exactly.
They're not hearing what you're saying, and they're just asking these 20 questions in their head because all of a sudden the paradigm shift is happening, and they don't get it. And the question is, okay, is there a more effective way to presenting this message of fulfillment? And I think that there is, and I just interviewed a gentleman yesterday that I think is doing an incredibly wonderful job. He just virtually showed up on the preterist scene about a month ago. And he's been a preterist for many, many, many years. He's been studying the Bible for 25 years. He's been refining because he's tried all the different ways of presenting this and run into all the same roadblocks that the rest of us have. And so he's actually kind of taken a new approach, and that is his focus in the beginning of his teaching is with the cross. What happened, you know, at the cross you know, the second day after that, when Jesus was, you know, in the tomb, and then the resurrection. And you start off with that common ground, that time that people understand. I mean, everybody, no matter what level of Christian they are, they understand the cross, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And he then focuses on, okay, now what was accomplished here through Jesus's earthly ministry, again, his death, burial, and resurrection. And from that starting point, you can get people to the point where they're saying, okay, yes, I agree with you. And then it's like, okay, now let's start moving forward and see how it is that the apostles and the authors of the New Testament interpreted those things that happened through Jesus's earthly ministry. And you start walking them through, and you know, you just get them to the point where they're saying, yes, I agree, and their head is nodding up and down. And then what happens is AD 70 is just a natural outworking of the reality that did happen at the cross. In other words, AD 30 was the cause, AD 70 was the result. And this is an approach that I've never really seen before. And he says, look, Mike, he goes, I've been working on this for years, and I've tried all these different approaches that didn't work. And he says, I've found a way that does work. Because when you can get people to that point, starting at the, you know, at the cross and working their way forward, then they say, okay, now I see all these time statements soon, near, at hand, and about to take place. And I can see that something had to have taken place. And then what you can do, this gentleman by the name of Paul refers to himself as an early church preterist. And then what he does is he looks at all of the writings of the early church fathers, and he says, look, now let's look at how they interpreted what happened here in the first century. And it just is an incredible tool to use. And it's something, like I said, that I never even thought of before. And so much of the time when we as preterists come into the online preterist community, you know, we've seen all these people like you, Don Preston, William Bell, that have been doing this for so many years. And I think a lot of times we just kind of get in this forward momentum where we just keep doing the same thing that everybody else is doing, say the same things over and over again. And we've never thought that there might be a better way of approaching the subject.
Yeah, certainly going up to him and say, do you know Jesus came back, is not probably the best approach.
No. And so I'm looking forward to exploring this a little bit further. His name is Paul Rakowitz. He is up in Highland, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. Now, mind you, I found out yesterday that I have been calling Motor City Detroit. And he goes, no, Mike, it's not Detroit. It's Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, you know, you say right. Detroit, I say Detroit, but anyways. Well, Dave, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about or ask you about is who wrote the Gospel of John? You've covered this in a lecture or two that you did a couple of years ago, and there was a book that was written. I don't know if you read the book. I don't even remember what the name of the gentleman is, but you can get it online, about the idea that the disciple whom Jesus loved was actually not John. And it is kind of an interesting thing when you look at the Gospel of John. There's nothing in there that would even says that it was John the apostle that wrote it. Now, how did you come to this conclusion? What exactly tipped it off to you that it may have possibly been the disciple whom Jesus loved, which most people know as Lazarus? Where'd you come up with this?
Well, I came up with this the way I come up with a lot of things. I was challenged on my view. You know, as I said, we send out a lot of CDs, the podcasts go out. Well, somebody emailed me and said, well, in this certain message, you said that the disciple Jesus loved was John. And why do you say that? You know, and I was just kind of taken back. I'm like, well, everybody knows that, you know, and then he kind of challenged me to, you know, to search that out and study that. And so I did, you know, I said, well, that's interesting. I'm going to have to take a look at that. So I started doing some research. And I was just absolutely amazed at what I found. And what I did is I challenged all the young people in our church. You know, I went to them and I said, look, I think somebody other than John wrote the fourth gospel. You know, see if you can figure out who it is. And, you know, it was kind of like a game for them for a while. I don't know how long it went on. But finally, one of them came up and suggested Lazarus. And I was like, how did you come up with that? You know, and so we just started talking about it. But so that's how I came to the view. I mean, somebody challenged me, you know, on what I believed. And as I began to look at the scriptures, you know, and study it out, I was simply amazed. And you know, there's, you see, you talked earlier about how people differ. And there was a lot of people in the preterist community that were just absolutely offended, you know, that I would believe that or teach that. You know, and the thing I got to say is the stuff I teach at my church. You know, we just happen to, you know, send it out in podcast form,
right.
CDs. What, so if you don't like it, you know, you really don't have to listen to it. But it's what I'm teaching my church because it's what I believe, you know. But I got a bunch of grief over it. But, you know, but the thing to me, and I, other people have found this out also, is that this whole thing with the Gospel of John is a very good primer to preterism. Because I think it rocks people's world to the fact that, you know, I believe so strongly in something that so clearly is not what the truth is, that what else have I missed? You know, and I know that, for example, Chuck Cody has used this over and over. And I think he said he knows four or five people that are preterists now because he started with this concept of, you know, the Gospel of John, who wrote that, you know. And once they saw that, that kind of opened them up to say, wow, what else am I missing? You know, and began to look, you know, at what preterism had to say and become open to it. So that's kind of where I started with it. You know, and as I looked through and began to read through the Gospel of John, and, you know, like it, you know, it doesn't say in the Gospel of John that John wrote the gospel, you know, and there's just, as you begin to, you know, get in there and really look at it, there's so many different clues that you just kind of, you know, you kind of shake your head and you think, man, that is just amazing. How did I miss that, you know, for so long?
Right.
You know? So, it was a pretty interesting study. And, you know, it's something I bounced off of, like I said, some people in our church, and we talked about it for a while before I actually, you know, came out publicly and taught it. But I've taught it at some conferences and gotten, you know, mixed response. Some people are like, wow, that is amazing. Other people are like, you know, it's just, you can't. And I'm not really sure what, I never have understood the opposition to it. I mean, if you don't agree with it, I understand that. But I mean, I'm not saying it's not inspired. I'm just questioning who the human author was, you know.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You know, that's the kind of the funny thing is, look, the Bible does not say who wrote the Gospel of John. So the reality of it is it's open. Mm-hmm. You know, this is fair game to have a discussion, to look at the evidence. And this is just one of those things. It's kind of like the dating of the book of Revelation. Nothing in the Bible says when it was written. Now, fortunately for us, the Syriac Peshitta actually has a heading at the top of the Apocalypse that says, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which was written by John while he was exiled on the island of Patmos by Caesar Nero. That is one of the biggest pieces, I think, of external evidence that lends to the early date of the book of Revelation, other than the other internal evidences. But yet some people are just so dogmatic about the idea that Revelation was written during the time of Domitian because of the notes that are in their Bible.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the, you know, I think that to me the biggest blockade, the biggest obstacle to sharing preterism is so few people know enough about the Bible to even discuss it.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's really a block. We had a couple visit the church, and that's a neat thing since we've been in the building and got our sign up. We've had visitors every week. But we had a couple visit 2 weeks ago, not last Sunday, Sunday before, and they were just, you know, they were just very excited. I mean, you could see the excitement. You could see them talking back during the service. Hey, man, that's right, you know, and just really getting into it. And afterwards, you know, my wife and I talked to them. They were just, oh, it's, you know, God led us here, and we want Bible teaching and, you know, all this stuff. And it was interesting because during the service, I talked about the promises of God. I said, God's promises have been misunderstood. And I said, you know, that's hard for us to imagine. I know. Can you imagine someone misunderstanding the promises of God? And then I went in to talk about, you know, I said, how about some things Jesus said? Have people misunderstood that? And I went into the brief topic about the time statements. You know, I said, Jesus said he's coming soon, but no one seems to believe that. And I gave some different references, and they were shaking and nodding with me, you know, so I'm like, this is interesting. And so I didn't know what the, you know, you don't know what's going over people's head and what they're really grasping. But anyway, asked him to, you know, check out the website and look a little more. Well, he did. And then he called me and he just, you know, directly questioned me. Do you believe the Lord returned? And do you believe the resurrection, the judgment have happened? I said, yes, I do. And, you know, he just was, you know, you could see was aghast at that. And so we tried to talk a little bit, but it was just, like you said, you know, we weren't getting anywhere. You know, I was saying stuff. He wasn't hearing it at all. And, you know, he gave me the the line from Peter, a day of the Lord is as a thousand years. You know, in other words, the time statements don't matter. And so I said, you know, okay, well, you know, there's not a lot I can do. You know, I said, I asked him to look at a few other things. And he just says, oh, I know what you believe. And I said, nah, I don't know that you really do. But, you know, he could not grab the concept. I mean, to him, it was just, that can't even be a possibility, you know? And even though Jesus said those things, you know, he couldn't have meant what he said. And so it was like, oh, this is just frustrating, you know?
Right.
But that's how it goes, you know? And you know, I find out that some people who come to the church, they'll hear it and they'll be like, whoa, I need to look at that. Others just throw dust in the air, tear their clothes, and they run, you know? So, and it depends on when people come in, you know, because, I mean, if a family comes into church and it, you know, I'm going verse by verse. So if it's not in the text, I don't usually talk about it, you know, but if it's in the text, we're going to talk about it. So it depends on when they're there. You know, they could come for several weeks and, you know, think we're a normal church, you know, and then they come on a Sunday when this is being taught and, you know, something about preterism and they're just like, wow, But I just, you know, being a Calvinist, I believe that, you know, we keep who God wants us to keep and he brings by who he wants to be, but there. So, you know, it's it's fun to me, though, because when I'm dealing with a preterist topic, if there are visitors there, it's fun to watch our congregation. You know, they just look, they're staring at the visitors, they're watching for a reaction, they're waiting for something, you know, and it's hilarious to me because, you know, they are just so, you know, concerned about what's going on. It's really funny. They're trying to evaluate, what are these people going to do?
Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever had anybody get up and leave in the middle of the service when you've actually breached it? Somebody that's new, that they, when they realize what you're saying, they're just like, oh, they just get up and leave.
Nope. I have never had anybody walk out. Usually afterwards, they'll, you know, they might want to just, you know, go right out without standing around and talking, you know, or they'll stop and ask a few questions just to clarification to try to see if I really said what they think I said. But now the very first message I preached on preterism, you know, after I resigned from the church the next Sunday, the very first message, you know, like I said, there was quite a few people there. There's probably more than 100 people there who are just more, you know, trying to figure out what's happened. Where's he going with this? And so the first time I preached it, I had a guy stand up and say, you're the devil. And I just asked them to sit down and be quiet. And I said, when we're done, I'll open it up for questions, you know. And it was funny because he is a lawyer and his wife is also a lawyer. And their answer to the time statements was that Jesus said that because he wanted every generation to be ready for his coming. So I said, so really he was lying or deceiving those early generations because he, you know, I mean, he knew he wasn't coming, you know, he still hasn't come yet in their view. So you're saying he's been deceiving all these generations just so he could keep us, you know, living a holy life. And they said, yeah. And I said, you're comfortable with that? God's tricking you and, you know, deceiving you, basically lying to you so you'll live holy? And that seemed to be okay with them, you know. I mean, it. I've been so amazed at the response of people, you know, have the things that they'll believe to not accept the obvious is just, you know. Well, we had a guy come down from Quantico. We're not far from Quantico here, and he came down. And he visited the church and went to lunch with us afterwards, and we're in this conversation, you know, and we're talking about preterism and, you know, brought up Matthew 16, 27, 28, and I said, so what are the options here? You know, the options are Jesus was confused or lying, you know, there's still some disciples walking around, or he returned when he said he did. And this guy said, I think there's still some, those disciples are still alive.
Oh.
This guy was a Marine. He taught logic at Quantico. And I said, are you serious? He says, yes, I believe there's some disciples. And I said, okay, whatever. You know, what do you say to that? I mean, you know, it's just amazing, you know, what some people believe, you know. I mean, I'm arguing with this guy about audience relevance, you know, and, you know, I said, well, is the command to march around Jericho? I said, is that command to you? And he said, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you better get yourself a nice get yourself a ticket and fly over to Jericho and walk around the pile of dust.
I said, oh, my. I mean, you know, that's what I mean. You know, they want to defend their position so badly that they'll go off the, you know, off the Richter scale in craziness to try to, you know, instead of just thinking about it, it's like, I can't even allow this view to be entertained. So it's just, you know, it's funny, but I enjoy it. I like seeing people's response. I like seeing, you know, how people respond differently to things. And you, you know, you can tell if someone is, you know, they're asking questions because they want to learn, or if they just, you know, they want to keep supporting what they already believe. So everybody's different and they respond differently to it. But it's been interesting over the years to see, you know, I had a guy come out of the service last year. You know, he comes out and he comes up to me and he goes, you know, you just destroyed 30 years of teaching that I've been taught. And I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. You know, all I ask is that you study it. And so he says, tell me what to study. So I gave him a bunch of stuff and he, sure enough, he studied it out, you know. But you just, you don't ever know how people are going to respond. And I think a lot has to do with their environment also. You know, I mean, you know, if I get a couple, young couple, they visit the church and, you know, she tells me, yeah, my dad's a Baptist preacher. You know, I said, okay, you might as well leave now, you know, because, you know, the first thing, you know, they're going to do is they're going to go back and ask their father or whoever, what do you think of this? And then they're going to say, run, you know, so then, you know, you're not going to have a chance anyway to talk to them. So.
Yes, sir. Well, now you brought up this, the disciple whom Jesus loved is actually the name of the website where you can find more information. There's a gentleman there. I'm trying to remember his name. I guess I should go back to that website and see.
Jim Phillips, I think.
Disciple.
I think that's his name. Yeah, Jim Phillips, the disciple whom Jesus loved. He's got a website.
Now, do you know, is he a preterist or partial preterist?
No, he is not a preterist.
It ain't not in any way?
And I tried to talk to him about it, and, you know, he's, I don't want to be negative here. I think he's a one-trick pony, you know. It's like, this is what I believe, the disciple, you know, it's like, that's his baby.
Right.
And he's all about that. And, you know, because him and I had several conversations, you know, and I said, look, Jim, this is not all there is to me. I mean, this is one, you know, I mean, I teach every Sunday and I'm teaching it and then boom, I'm moving on. You know, it's something else. And, you know, I'm not focusing or staying on that week after week, harping about that. But, yeah, he, you know, he's written a book on it. And so he, you know, and he's very strong on it, but he does not, you know, I tried to talk to him about preterism. I shared some things with him and he just, no, he really wasn't interested, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, too, is I've discovered over the years that there are some people that you can share this message with, and they go, oh, yeah, oh, man, yeah, that sounds right. And that's it. And you know, I know some of us, people like you, like myself, have this burden to get out there and, you know, tell everybody about it. But some people don't, you know.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. In your church, is there anybody there that's a part of your body that is not a full preterist? Or is there anybody that's there because they like the fellowship, that they're a part of the body, but yet they're still not with you regarding the end times?
Probably just my wife.
Really?
No, oh. We call her our token dispensationalist. My wife is someone who does not like being out of sync, doesn't like being, you know, not the norm. So, you know, we tease her about that. But no, I think everybody who's there with us, yeah, this is what they believe. At right now, I would say everybody there, yeah, does hold to this. A lot of the guys that are there, you know, like Garrett and David Matthews, who run the, you know, the sound and the video stuff, these guys are around 24, 25 years old. This is all they've known, you know, since they were little kids. You know, they've been, you know, you figure 13 years back, they were 10, 11 years old, you know, when their families were in the church and this came about. So, I mean, this is the only thing they've been taught. To them, this is normal. Right. You know, this is just what it teaches, you know.
Well, I think you're bringing up a good point. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of our detractors. I've used that term before, and somebody gave me a hard time about using that term because it has such a negative connotation to it. But I'm thinking a detractor is just somebody that disagrees with you. But anyways, right. This person that disagrees with this view of fulfillment, they said, you know what, Mike, if it wasn't for the internet, you guys wouldn't have a movement. And I'm, you know, at first I'm thinking, wow, you know, that he's right. And I'm like, well, the reality of it is the internet is a part of all of our lives now. And the internet has helped take this message of fulfillment to the uttermost parts of the earth. It just, you can't just unplug the internet and say, okay, now preterism doesn't exist anymore. All it's done is it has facilitated the ability for us to spread this message. And, you know, to some extent,
yeah, absolutely.
To some extent, you know, it has blossomed because of the internet. But it's not just an internet-based movement. It is a far-spread movement where there are plenty of people, you know, all across the United States. Now, mind you, 90% of the traffic that comes to AD70.net is from the United States. But when you look at from a worldwide perspective, it's kind of interesting. I was just amazed this last week. I actually posted the top 10 countries that have been visiting AD70.net over the last month. And yes, the United States was number one, but like Brazil was number two. You know, the Philippines was number three, Australia number four. There was even, I think it was like Libya. I mean, just all these countries that are, you know, even Muslim countries are just coming to the site for some odd reason. And I'm like, okay. You know, it just, I didn't expect it that we would even have our number two largest audience is in Brazil. And we don't even have any Spanish broadcasting. So we are definitely reaching out to the whole world, and we're seeing some results. We had somebody in the that was watching the video and hanging out in the chat room from France.
Ah, Michelle, that's right. Yeah. I saw Michelle there for the first time, you know, and it's interesting, you know, she is in France, and of course it was afternoon there. I guess it was around 5 o'clock her time when it's 11 hours. So she tuned in and logged on. She's a beautiful woman, just pretty excited about the Lord and about, you know, the message of fulfillment. And, she's been kind of, you know, that we call them our extended family. You know, these are people who are really involved in the ministry, yet, you know, they've never been to the church, a lot of them, and, you know, but they're very connected with us. So it's kind of exciting.
Well, I guess technically now when you run into somebody in person and they ask you, or even if they email you and say, what time is your service? And you need to respond, where do you live?
That's right.
And they're like, what do you mean? Where do I live? Well,
yeah. Well, like in Las Vegas, you know, the GANs, they come online and they watch us and then they go to church, you know, because it's much earlier there for them, 3 hours difference. So, and I guess the same for you. You're up early watching it, you know. It's like,
brother,
what time, 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock,
I guess, for you.
You know, technically I have to get up at about 7 or 7:30 because I want to have a little something to eat, got to get the coffee made. And you know, we don't just, you know, make coffee. We make French pressed coffee. So that takes some effort. And I'll tell you something. 10 or 15 minutes to actually make coffee in the morning before you've had any is sometimes a task. Nonetheless, we have been having fun getting up and attending your service. And I guess in some sense I can say I'm an official or unofficial member of your church. I know you don't have membership, but, you know, I've been having fun attending the church service, hanging out in the chat room. And I've been doing it for 3 weeks now, and we've had three different chat rooms.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. Every week it's totally different, you know. But yeah, it's been such a, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I played that video that Dave Heath made and sent me, put it up on YouTube about, you know, his dad. And his dad, you know, his dad's 86 and he's been having some physical problems with his legs, so he really can't get out of the house. And so they've been sitting home watching us, and, you know, we've been real close to them for years, and, you know, very much involved in the ministry. So it's just so exciting for them, you know. And I've had a couple people call me and tell me, you know, being in the chat room, they said, I feel like it's a community. You know, and I mean, that just brings tears to my eyes to think that, you know, here are these people, you know, they're isolated from everything. And yet on Sunday morning, because of a chat room, they're in there talking with other people, asking questions, sharing things. I just, you know, the first time a couple of weeks ago, I had Garrett print off the chat room for me, a copy of it. And I, you know, watched it that night, came home and got a cup of coffee and sat down and was reading through it. And I was just so blessed. You know, it was just so encouraging. I mean, that was the time when I mentioned Blood Brothers by Elias Secor, but I couldn't remember the author. And so you put up on the screen Blood Brothers, and then you put a link, and then the lady, some other lady says, I'm buying the book now, you know, and I thought, this is just incredible.
Right.
You know, I mean, absolutely incredible.
It's insane to think about that, that, you know, something as simple as that, where, you know, these things are happening in real time, and it's going to be, you know, I have my thoughts and I have my ideas of what things are going to be like in about 10 years, but people are, you know, we think it's neat that we can actually watch uninterrupted video of your service live. We can now also participate in the chat room with one another. And, you know, like somebody mentioned, it's like, hey, we can talk and the pastor's not going to tell us to be quiet.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't interrupt me, so that's really cool.
Yeah, but I can imagine that what we're going to see over the next 10 or 20 years because of technology is that, you know, somehow or another, we're going to be able to put something on our head and be able to virtually put ourselves in the pews.
Hmm.
Now, how that's going to happen, I don't know. But one of the best ways that I've discovered to find out where we're going regarding technology is to read something that was written by Ray Bradbury about 60 years ago. I mean, seriously, read science fiction from about 60 or 70 years ago, and the technologies that we now have, they were writing about. So if you want to know where we're going to be at in, say, 20 years, read science fiction from 40 years ago.
Hmm.
Because these guys were writing about it. Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. There are two pieces of technology that we have now that are so common, they're almost giving them away. These flat screen TVs that you can hang on your wall. You can pick them up for a few hundred bucks now, and 10 years ago, they were $15,000.
Right. Yeah.
The Bluetooth technology, again, in this book that was written in the 1940s, the people had these earbuds that they could put in their ear and they could communicate with somebody else all the way on the other side of the city.
Hmm.
And so, again, I just, you know, I do my best to kind of, and I'm a big fan of science fiction. So for me, it's kind of neat. And I always kind of question, it's like, okay, is that going to be a reality? We don't know until it happens. I'm not going to worry about it. But, you know, I can move forward with those kind of ideas in mind as we continue to build the technology, continue to build all these websites, and just try and stay ahead of the curve.
Hmm.
And you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, Mike. That's technology.
You know, I don't know what the curve is. That's the thing. I just kind of follow it as it goes along. And it's, I mean, I like technology and not all that, you know, don't know all that much about it, but I like to use it, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, the things I can do on my phone, like I made a comment a couple of weeks ago, I haven't used a paper Bible in probably 6 months, you know, because I have a Bible program on my phone, my Android, that I absolutely love. And I just read from that every day. You know, it'll read for me if I want it to read for me, or I can just, you know, read that. I can highlight, I can search, you know, I can do all kinds of things, you know, on that Bible, and it's always with me, you know. So wherever I am, if I have some time, I can just pull out my Bible and, you know, look through something. I can go on the internet and, you know, search something out. It's just all from a phone. I mean, you know, that's, you know, I remember when the first cell phones came out, I was a chaplain for the police department in Chesapeake.
Mm-hmm.
And so they issued the duty chaplain a phone. You know, it was one of these boxes, like, you know, with the phone on top of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that looked like a little box that you carried around. And I just thought that was the neatest thing in the world, to have that box in my car, you know, carrying that thing around. Now, you know, you would laugh at something like that because the technology is so, you know, so advanced in just a few years. But,
right.
you know.
And those things back then, they cost like $1 a minute to make a phone
yeah.
call. You know, it's really kind of funny. I remember back in like 1993, 1994, I was in sales. You know, I've been in sales ever since I was a teenager. Now, I haven't always worked in sales, but I've always been a salesman. And, you know, it's kind of funny how we used to sell cell phones. I mean, these huge devices. You could get a plan, they called it the Super Value 80, okay? It was $69 a month. And for that $69 a month, you got 80 minutes of airtime. And that was the big plan. And I was like, people were paying for it. And then when I think now, I use my cell phone, depending on the month, anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 minutes a month.
Mm.
And not because I want to, but just kind of part of what I'm doing. I'm on the phone a lot.
Right.
And you know, even back then in like 1993 and 94, they had their like what they would have referred to as like an unlimited plan. It was like 600 minutes and it cost $239 a month.
And that was a lot back then too.
Yeah, it was. The first cell phone I had was in 1994. It was one of those brick phones, the ones that are actually you have to register them as a lethal weapon. They're so big and heavy. And, you know, it had that big old antenna sticking off the top. You had to roll down your window if you wanted to talk with it on your left-hand side so the antenna would stick out because, you know, anyways. But that thing, I paid $19 a month. I think it came with like 20 minutes of airtime. And then anything after that was 90 cents a minute during the day. Ah, I couldn't believe it. Well, Dave, what do you see for Berean Bible Church over the next coming years? Are you, you know, planning on anything new? Are you just kind of, you know, moving along where the Spirit leads? What's in the plans?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I'm not a visionary, Mike. I really am not. Like I said, to me, I want to study. I want to teach. I love discovering new things during the week. And sometimes my weeks are very difficult because you're trying to figure out a text and it's just like it's not coming together. And I'm banging my head on the desk and I'm trying to make some sense of it. And then normally by the end of the week, I've got, you know, an idea, a handle on it. And I'm just like start getting excited and I love to teach. But I'm not a visionary. I don't know where we'll go. I don't, you know, like I said, I would have never imagined us being where we are now. I mean, you know, having podcasts, that's something I didn't, you know, I didn't know anything about that stuff. I mean, other people did all that. I you know, I'm just, I guess I'm kind of feel like I'm along for the ride, you know, right. I'm just going along and, you know, enjoying the experience.
Now,
but
hey,
I don't know where we'll go. The reason we moved to the building was so we could reach some people. We needed a physical location. And also we wanted to do a broadcast and we couldn't do it there. So, and we have a sign up. We're in a very busy street. So, you know, I imagine we're going to get some people. We're going to have opportunities to, you know, to reach out to some new people. And we have we've got a bunch of Glenn Hill's new book, The Christianity's Great Dilemma.
Right.
And when visitors come in, we're handing those out to visitors as kind of a, you know, an introduction to preterism. You know, several people in our church have read Glenn's book and just speak very highly of it. Say it's so understandable. It's so basic to just lay out here's preterism.
Right.
And Glenn's just done a great job with that. And so, you know, we're using that to hand out to people and, you know, through the website and where everything else, we're just trying to, you know, get the word out of fulfillment because I think it's important. You know, I think, you know, you've been telling me that you've seen a great increase in web traffic and you think it's because of what's going on in the Middle East. And, yeah, you know, people are confused about end times and what's going to happen when. And I get people asking me about 2012 and all this, you know, and it, we have the truth and it can really set people free. And so we're just doing everything we can, using every avenue available to try to proclaim that truth to those who are willing to hear it. So where it'll go, I really don't know.
Nice. Well, you know what? You just keep doing what you're doing, Dave, because nobody does it quite like you. You know? And
yeah.
we definitely like the fact that, and you know, this truly, I think, comes out in who you are, in that you're willing to go wherever the scriptures lead, whether it be, you know, some of the more controversial messages you've preached over the last couple of years. And, you know, I'm sure people know what I'm talking about there.
But, no, you're not talking about geocentricity, are you?
Where's that red button? Where's that red button? Darn it. Beep. But see, that's the thing. You obviously feel no emotional attachment to, you know, worrying about what somebody's going to think about what you're saying. And that's kind of neat because you are truly free from the fetters of somebody that might pull upon the purse strings, as some people might say, you know, and that's definitely kind of neat. And I think that's probably why people appreciate you even more, because I'm not going to agree with you regarding the geocentricity thing, but you know what? To me, it doesn't matter one way or the other. I mean, that's fine. There are certain things in the Bible that I think are very clear. And then again, I think there are some things in the Bible that are less clear, like the Gospel of John. Who wrote the Gospel of John? And so these, again, are things that I think, you know, definitely within liberty of being in Christ, we have a big, you know, we have a lot of room within the body to move around and test things out and try things out. And you know what? Who knows? In 2 years, you might change your opinion. But, you know, it's again, it's that freedom to explore that I think is what people like the most about what you're doing.
Well, I think that's what's most important. You know, if you're going to teach the Bible, I think it only makes sense to try to teach what it really says, not what you want it to say or what you hope it says. That would be foolish, you know, to teach something that, you know, you really don't think it's true. Why even bother teaching it then, you know? And it was funny, not, I don't know how long, but maybe about a year ago, my wife said to me, aren't you, it was during one of these messages, you know, these controversial messages, she says, aren't you afraid that, you know, this is going to cost you? And I'm like, I just laughed. I'm like, you know, not really, because, you know, I'm just teaching what I think is true. I can't, you know, if I was worried about what it cost me, I guess I never would have became a preterist in the first place. But it was like when I saw it, it was like I had no options. You know, people say, oh, that was really courageous of you to leave the church. No, it wasn't. I didn't have a choice. You know, it wasn't right. Like I made this great choice to, you know, step out and do this. I didn't have a choice. This is what I saw. I believed it. So, okay, here I am. You know, I'm just one of those people that, you know, I say what I believe and, you know, let the chips fall where they will. You know, I'm not very pragmatic in that matter. I just, the only thing I want to know, is it true? Is it right? And if I feel that it is, and like I said, I know my theology isn't perfect. I just don't know where the errors are, because if I did, I'd fix them, you know, but I don't think anybody's got it all down, but, you know, we're just trying the best. And that's why it's neat that there's so many people in this movement with different views, and you can look at different options, study different things. And, you know, and the thing I just love is when our views are different and yet we can still get along, like you said. You know, we don't have to make a big deal over the some difference. We can still get along on the things we agree with. And realize that we're all in different places. We're seeing different things at this time that you might not be seeing. Somebody else might not be seeing. Maybe later you will. Maybe later I'll see something different. You know, I just, you know, it's a journey, Mike. We're on a journey.
Yes, we are.
And we're all in different places. And I think we have to just accept each other and, you know, and keep moving on that journey.
Right. By the way, we want 1711 back.
Talk to Chuck.
Chuck, you know,
I don't want to put any pressure on Chuck, but talk to Chuck.
Yes, Chuck. We won't pressure Chuck. Chuck. No, you know what? I'm glad you were willing to come on here with me today. And, you know, my hope is that you and I can do this from time to time, just come together and just talk about what's going on in our life and, you know, with our ministries. And just kind of be able to encourage one another as well as everybody else out there that's listening to this, whether it's live or via podcast. Just know that you have a place where you can, you know, come to and enjoy fellowship. And my hope is that everybody likes our music here on AD70.net. It's, you know, it's eclectic. But
yeah, well, that's good, because people are eclectic, you know.
Yeah, well, if you try to please just one audience, you're going to exclude all the rest.
Yeah, you don't. You know, I don't think that's the issue, is trying to worry about pleasing people, because you can never do that. You know, one man likes, the other man will hate. So you just got to do what you got to do, and, you know, see what happens. And you know, Mike, I didn't mean to avoid the subject of the disciple whom Jesus loved. I guess we, you know, we need more time to get into that. But let me just say this. As a teaser, I guess, to people out there who are listening and are questioning it, there's only one man, one, named in the Bible that is said to be loved by Jesus. And who is it? It's not John. And so I'll just throw that out there as, you know, a point to, you know, to refer to look at, that only one person, the Bible says.
Right.
It is loved by Jesus. And I thought that's kind of interesting. That's kind of where it all starts. And as you begin to study from that, you find out that, you know, it's Lazarus, right. You know, and then, you know, to go into to find out who he is. And of course, I believe that Lazarus not only wrote the Gospel of John, but he wrote 1st, 2nd, 3rd John and Revelation. Mm. And in the message, I get into why I believe that. I believe Lazarus was a priest. And because he was a priest, you know, you see that language in Revelation. It's so priestly, so cultic. You know, that that's not from a Galilean, you know. So,
interesting.
Well, okay. I'm done with that.
Well, you're
just wanted to throw that out.
Your dog sounds like he's wanting some attention, Dave.
No, he's looking out the window and he must see something outside. There's another dog or something out there.
I see a possum. My dog loves possums. You know, my dog Max, he's about 45 to 50 pounds. He's half black lab, half Australian shepherd. Beautiful dog. And let me tell you something. This dog can jump 6 feet in the air. And I'm like, really? And this dog pulls possums off the back fence. And when he does, all you see is this possum in his mouth going back and forth and back.
Wow. Opossums are pretty tough critters, too. You know, they're not something you want to mess with.
No. Matter of fact, there have been probably about four times in the last few months where I've had to scoop up a possum in my shovel and walk him out the front yard and put him out on the parkway. Not because they're dead. I mean, Max has never killed a possum. He's killed a rat. He's killed multiple birds. And this dog, I mean, seriously, he can catch birds better than a cat. And I'm like, really? All these birds out there, and this dog is able to sneak up on them. And he catches them, and he, you know, needless to say, those birds, they've gone on to be with the Lord. Dave, I do thank you for joining me here today on this Tuesday midday, and hopefully we'll get to do this again soon.
All right, Mike, it was fun.
All right, God bless. All right. You are tuned to listener-supported AD70.net. We are Christian radio from a slightly different point of view. We're putting sanity back into Christianity one day at a time. If you'd like to help us accomplish this goal, you can do so by going to our homepage over at AD70.net. You click on the support tab. You can make a one-time donation of any size. You can also become a regular subscriber for as little as $5 a month. I also want to remind you about our podcast page located at thepodcast.org, where you can get a copy of this and all of our previous live broadcasts for free. God bless. We'll see you back here next time for another edition of The Journey. Music, teaching, and so much more. This is AD70.net.